Business Class is brought to you by the Tourism Academy, harnessing the power of science, business psychology, and adult education to advance the tourism industry and build sustainable economies. Learn how to engage your community, win over stakeholders, and get more visitors at tourismacademy.org.
Steve Ekstrom with the Tourism Academy, tourismacademy.org. Today's guest, Santiago Carrada with Visit Tampa Bay. And you are wearing a fantastic pin. Do you want to point out what that pin represents?
Well, you know, about 10 years ago, we went through a rebranding exercise. And, you know, we found out some interesting stuff throughout that process that people really didn't know Tampa. They really weren't that aware of the destination. It wasn't a bad reaction. It wasn't a good reaction. It was just like a no reaction. So we decided that we wanted to brand Tampa as this treasure that you need to uncover, this treasure that you need to come and own. And so our brand logo is a keyhole to a treasure chest with the keys. And we like to say we offer this treasure to the world. So it's a treasure awaiting discovery, and it's been a really great brand for us. I can tell you, back in 2014, hotel revenues here were about $423 million. This calendar year, we're going to be at $1 billion in hotel revenue. And if that's not an indication of people coming to the destination, I don't know what is, because those are hard black and white numbers. And I think the brand has really helped to make that happen for us.
What do you think makes a brand a great iconic representation of an area?
You know, I think, you know, sometimes people abandon a brand too soon. I think you have to give a brand time to resonate and to become credible and to become recognizable. I can tell you that, you know, when we started with the brand, you know, people thought, wow, that is the coolest logo. I carry a pocket full of these pins because everybody loves the logo. So I hand them out like candy. I literally have a pocket full of the pins. It's the funniest thing because I have them right here. And I give them away because, you know, I like the brand exposure. And I can tell you that, you know, it has to be a credible brand, right? I mean, there's a reason why the Golden Arches mean something. There's a reason why the Nike Swoosh means something. And for us, you know, this means a lot. And so you got to back it up, right? There has to be some truth to advertising. And I think when people come here for the first time, they realize that it is this incredible treasure and they can't wait to come back. We hear that all the time. I had no idea. I had no idea. I had no idea. And I think now, you know, 10 years of really embracing the brand, the call to action. I mean, you look behind me, those are our brand colors on our windows and calls to action throughout the office on my mouse pad. I mean, you know, we live and breathe the brand. And so when you're that passionate about it and people feel that you're that passionate about it, there's buy-in. And so our locals love the brand. You know, the people who come here, obviously, and experience what we have to offer, then really understand what we're all about. So I think you have to. I think you have to be committed to it. I wear branded clothing even during my leisure time, and so it's important. It's important for everybody on the team here to exemplify the brand.
How would you describe your personal brand? You know, what maybe three words that you would like others to use to describe you?
Oh wow! Well, I'll use maybe terms that others have used to describe me, because I don't think I went out to deliberately have a brand, right? So there are a few things people recognize me for. One is the hair, right? I always have longer hair than most people. So the hair, my team doesn't even like me to get a haircut because it's become a part of the Visit Tampa Bay President's brand. So the hair is always there. And then I'm a really short guy, so the only way I can get a few inches is not by wearing stilettos, but by wearing cowboy boots. So I wear cowboy boots because I got a heel. And so they'll usually say, that's a long-haired guy with the cowboy boots. And there are people who actually think I'm cool because of that. So, you know, the cool long-haired guy with the cowboy boots, I think, is the unintentional brand of something. I just hate going to the barbershop. So the hair just comes because I don't like going to the barbershop. I'm short. I wear the boots. And, you know, I try to be a cool guy, so maybe it all works. But I think that's what others have said about me, not what I would say about myself.
Are you the Jimmy Buffett of the CEO world?
I don't know if I'm the Jimmy Buffett. We just welcomed Virgin Atlantic to town. They're flying dailies to Heathrow. And, I had a chance to actually meet Sir Richard Branson, who I've been confused with many, many times. You know, people in other countries believe that that's Richard. And I had a chance to actually tell him that I, was his mini me, and I really wanted to be him because I wouldn't mind living on an island and having as much money as he has. But it was, one of those things where I don't know. Am I the Richard Branson of the people have called me Andrea Bocelli before when my hair is shorter. So I have no idea. I really don't. I don't take myself too seriously. That's why I think my team loves putting me in very funny situations, because I'm a good sport, and I don't take a lot of things too seriously. I mean, you have to have some humor about you.
What's a funny situation that your team has put you in that you think worked for your organization, but others might cringe to think about?
Oh boy. So yeah, they do a lot of that. A few years ago, we had our annual meeting, and think of this very exciting event, right? We were in tourism, so lots of performances and numbers and, TED Talk with music. I mean, it's just one of those things, right? And it was on Halloween. So they decided that we were going to do a whole Day of the Dead. Coco was a big Disney movie out, whole Day of the Dead situation. And we had a mariachi band on stage, a mariachi band with masks. So they decided I would be one of the mariachis on stage with the same mask, the same outfit that they all had. They didn't care. I didn't know how to play a guitar or a violin or, a trumpet. I'm just going to be up there and do my best strumming a guitar, acting like I was part of this mariachi group, and actually would have face paint under my mask. So I did this whole opening sequence with the mariachi band, and people in the audience didn't know it was me. And then we went out in the audience, and I got to go around with my guitar and whisper in people's ears. And it was well received, because then they kept calling for me to come on stage, and no one knew I was one of the mariachis. And then I just took off the stuff and still had face paint on and went on. So it was a lot of fun. They had a lot of fun. They just almost dressed me up like Elton John for our annual meeting a few days ago, where I was wearing these big old glasses, and it looked like I was the Rocket Man wearing a tablecloth, because I had this glittery jacket that looked like one of the tablecloths. And so they have a lot of fun with me. I have fun with it.
Do you think that looking at other DMOs, that maybe they take themselves too seriously sometimes?
It's hard for me to speak about others because, what I have found, and I've been in this position almost a decade, and what I have found is, expectations, behaviors, communities are very different throughout, not just the country, but even here in Florida. And so, you have to fit the community that you're working for and working on behalf of. And so, I think things that I get away with here, I might not be able to get away with somewhere else. And it's because, I've been a part of this community now for 20 years and work for the mayor and I'm recognizable, and people know that, I like to push the boundaries. I like to push the envelope. I'm outspoken. What you see is what you get, right? There's no wondering where Santiago's coming from or what he's talking about. And so I don't know, let me just put it this way. If I left this community and went to another community, I would first try to understand the community and the local customs and what the expectations are, what the behaviors are, get comfortable in that, and then start to push the envelope, right? You just don't come in. It's a recipe for disaster. You walk into somebody else's home, you decide to kick off your shoes, go in your refrigerator, take a shower without knowing the people. I don't think, they think you're crazy. And so I like to make sure I understand the community. I mean, I had to. I lived in Jersey for 13 years and moved to Miami. I lived in Miami for 27 years and now have made Tampa my home for almost 20 years. And you really have to feel it out and then, be you at some point but not be you where it's going to be uncomfortable for you and for others. And so I think it's a matter of understanding the audience, right? Back to what we do, you got to understand your audience and your behaviors have to be somewhat in line with that audience.
Who do you look up to in the industry or as a mentor, personally or professionally?
You know, I look up to, I would say, you know, the folks that have been around for a while. And I'm going to tell you why. You know, people who've been around for a while are survivors. You know, they understand how to survive. And I think, you know, when you look at, and that's not to say I don't like the younger generation that's coming in, because I think they're creative and they're dynamic and they're energetic and they do all, you know, do fantastic things, right? And we like to do those things. I'm probably the oldest guy on the team because I surround myself with that youth and that energy and all of those things. But if you're looking at someone as an executive, if you're looking at someone as a leader, and I always say, I want to be known as a great leader. I don't want to be known as a great president CEO of a DMO or DLO, Destination Leadership Organization, which we've now monikered. You know, we want to be known as a Destination Leadership Organization, not a Destination Marketing or Sales Organization. I think, you know, you look at people who have been able to evolve when things have evolved around them. And that's a true sign of sustainability. That's a true sign of leadership. You know, it's easy to lead when things are good. I used to say that all the time. You know, when things are good, who can't lead? When things are tough is when your leadership mettle is tested. And that's when you really have to prove to others that you can lead. And so I like to look up to people who have been doing this for a while. People who maybe spent, I'm not talking about job jumping, because there are a lot of people who job jump and then you really can't measure their success, right? They're there for a minute and then they're somewhere else. I'm talking about someone who's been somewhere for a decade and had great success and then duplicated that in a very different environment with a very different other group of people. That to me is quality, right? That you can transform a place, and when you think your work is done there, then you can go to another place and do it under a different set of circumstances. I think that's critical. And so those are kind of the people I look up to. But, you know, I have lots of people I look up to. You know, I think my parents are important to me. You know, I've got a lot of education under my belt, but I think the greatest education I ever got was right at home during my formative years and the type of person I've become. You know, there are great leaderships like Martin Luther King that I've always looked up to, you know, President Obama, you know, you go down the list, President Reagan. I mean, there are lots of people that I think, you know, that I've read about and studied that I try to emulate in character, including my parents. I mean, I think some of those lessons you get at home are probably a lot more more critical to your development than some of the things you learn in a book or some of the things you pick up in school.
What are one of the two of those things that you learned from your parents that you try to emulate?
Well, you know, the one which, you know, I think is really critical is you, I mean, if you're right of mind, right? I mean, there's right of mind and then there's not. So let's just make sure we're clear of that. You know, if you're right of mind, you normally want to treat others the way you want to be treated. And I always, always, always have that front of mind. I want to treat people the way I would like to be treated. And I like to be treated with respect and with dignity and with fairness and honesty. So I carry out my behavior all the time, treating people the way I want to be treated. So that's first and foremost. And I think the second, which is probably one that a lot of people don't understand, is that we're not entitled to anything. We're not entitled to anything. You work and you get what you deserve. And sometimes, you know, you don't, but you do. You work. No one's supposed to give you anything. And you don't take things for granted. And so I think, you know, we were always taught you work hard, you get educated, you're honest, you treat people the way you want to be treated, and that's what you do. And it doesn't always work out for you, but that's what you do. And so, you know, I can tell you that sometimes I worked hard and I didn't get the reward I thought I was going to get. And that was okay as long as you felt you did your best at working for it and you didn't leave anything off the table. You did the best that you could do and you still didn't get what you thought you would get. And there's a level of success even in that, you know, I gave it all I had, and maybe it was out of my control. the final outcome. And so I think those two for me are the most important thing. You know, treat people the way you want to be treated, and you're not entitled to anything, and you have to work for what you want. And I think that's critical. In my development, that's what I've done my whole life.
Point out something in your office that means a lot to you and tell me about it.
Oh, wow. Well, there are, you know, usually I keep things in the office that mean something. If you were here, you would see a photo of me with President Clinton. You would see a photo of me with President Obama. Those are obviously, you know, they're important. You would see mementos of mayors I've worked for, because I've worked for three mayors in Florida. So those would be there. You know, I think the ones that matter most to me are the ones of family. You know, I have a photo of my nephew in full military gear fighting in Iraq and fighting in Afghanistan. You know, I have photos of my daughter and, you know, a beautiful young woman, and a photo of me and her. You know, I think those are really what matter most, although there are tributes in the office and there are proclamations and commendations. But I think you need to have family. I think family is really important. I think when you're happy personally, you can be a very good professional. And I think that matters. It's all a part of a puzzle, and all the puzzle pieces need to fit.
What advice would you have for somebody who's looking to find that work-life balance?
It's tough. It's tough. You have to measure yourself. You have to understand, you know, as impactful as you might be. And listen, we all have a little bit of an ego, right? The older I get, the smaller the ego becomes for me. But I can tell you, you know, I always went full throttle with every job I've had. And I always thought that I was indispensable, and you're not. You know, jobs continue. The work continues. You know, for the most part, most organizations don't crumble when you go, right? They stay. And I think what you have to understand is, yeah, you go in and you give it your very, very best, but work on your personal relationships, work on your mental health, work on being happy as a person. I think when you have that balance, and you can understand that balance, you're going to be happy in life. You're going to be happy at work. You're going to be happy in your personal life. You're going to make others happy. And you have to understand that. And that's hard, because there are only so many hours in the day, and technology has made it all the much harder to unplug. You know, I'm old. So when I was a younger man, there wasn't a smartphone. You know, there wasn't a cell phone. There wasn't, you know, you went into a setting, you worked from 9 to 5. And when you went home, you went home. You weren't able to get on a computer. You weren't able to get, you know, on a tablet or a smart TV or a smartphone, whatever the case might be. And you spent that time with your family. There was dinner time, and there was bedtime, and there was television time. And you spent that time socializing with your family. That doesn't exist anymore. And we have to be very, very careful with what that does to people. Because, you know, I've been, you know, on very few vacations, but I've been on a vacation where there's a beautiful world to see and everybody's looking at their smartphone. And it's like, are you guys kidding me right now? You know, you're missing this incredible waterfall or this incredible beach because you're looking at your smartphone. And I think we need to balance that out. I mean, it's great technology. It's wonderful. It allows us to do virtual things and distance things, look what we're doing today. But at the end of the day, you have to figure out how to pause that and get to know people and get to enjoy places and enjoy life, because it's not on that phone. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things on that phone, but air and water and fire are not in that phone. They're out here in the world.
Yeah. Is there anything I didn't ask that you wish I did?
No, you know, I'm very happy that it's a personal thing. I think there's a combination with the personal and the professional, and I think we've touched on that. I think leadership is important for anybody that's aspiring to be a leader. you know, learning to listen and learning to include information that you receive in your decisions is important. There is no my way or the highway. I hate to tell people that. You know, when there's my way or the highway, there's resentment, there's control, there's managing. And you want to be a leader, you don't want to be a manager. You want to make sure that people see you as something, as someone who's approachable, that is willing to change direction if the facts are right and you can be persuaded. And of course, you know, life experiences help to develop those opportunities, those situations. You know, if you've seen enough and you've been involved in enough, you'll be able to decide when you can change course or not, and whether it makes sense or not based on, you know, what somebody's telling you. And, you know, I was a high school principal. I was a school teacher. I've done a lot of things. I worked for three mayors. I've been now the head of a destination leadership organization for 10 years. And I've always said this, and I used to say this to high school kids all the time. Be the best representative of yourself that you can be, because you never know who's watching. You never know who's watching, whether it's someone trying to emulate you, whether it's someone who's trying to give you a job or a promotion or may think of you later in life and offer you a great job, like someone that just saw you and thought, you know, that Santiago is, you know, a great guy. If I ever have a position for him, I'm going to give him a call. And it could be a big payday for you. And it has to do with the way you carry yourself and the way you behave. And, you know, I guess back to parent lessons, right? No one's better than anybody around here. You know, everyone is as good as everybody else. And you have to behave that way. You have to stop and say hello to people. You have to stop and ask people how they're doing. You know, it's part of being part of the human race. And I think, like I said, if you do those kinds of things, I think you'll be a happy person.
If folks want to plan a visit to Tampa Bay, how would they go about learning?
Oh, my gosh. VisitTampaBay.com. Excuse me. You can go on all our social media sites, our YouTube site. We have incredible content out there. It's fabulous. And if you come to Tampa, you're going to like it here. It is one of the cleanest, safest, most beautiful cities in America. We're on everybody's top 10 list for something. We're just on, you know, Wallet Hub's top 10 list for a great place to spend Thanksgiving. So if you Google us, if you look at us, we're in everybody's rankings. I think everybody's discovered that treasure, and either they're coming to visit or they're coming to stay, which is fine by us.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me here on the podcast. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you so much.